Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. My guest on Leave Your Mark today is probably one of the most accomplished people that has ever been on this show, I will say. And when you hear this bio, you are going to be like, how can one person do all those things? So Amanda Baldwin, welcome to Leave Your Mark. I'm so honored to have you here. Amanda is the CEO of Supergoop, which is everyone's chicest favorite sunblock brand. We all love it and know it. And Amanda, you are a veteran of the beauty industry, and you, prior to Supergoop, were a member of the operating team at L. Catterin, the largest global consumer-focused investment fund, collaborating, of course, with management teams across the portfolio with a particular focus on the beauty sector. Before that, you led omnichannel marketing strategy of Dior Beauty at LVMH. You held several positions at Clinique, which is part of Estee Lauder. And then prior to that, your career began as a private equity investor at Apex Partners and an investment banking analyst at Goldman Sachs. And of course, you've got all the educational accolades from Harvard to Wharton. I mean, all the things. It's actually mind-blowing how many unbelievable attributes you have on your resume. When you think about what has contributed to all of these wins throughout your career, what would you say is like the single differentiating factor to your success?
Thank you so much for having me, and always looked up to you. So it's really special for me to be here. You know, look, I think that I have like a little bit of a theory, and now that I'm a mom and a parent, I think that personalities are kind of, they come at birth, and probably the way I would have described myself as a young kid has sort of played itself out for better or for worse. I think like I've always been someone who's just really willing to put in the work, and you know, I was studious in school, and I was a gymnast, and there's one thing gymnastics teaches you, it's like repetition, practice, hard work, like there's no shortcut to it. And so I think just a willingness to do that and a belief that hard work pays off and that you create your own luck and all these things, I think is probably number one. Number two is just a belief in trying to be a good person, and karma is everything and relationships yes. are everything, and just really just being mindful about that. And I think the third that I've learned more recently as I've sort of entered this more entrepreneurial phase, which I did not grow up thinking I was going to have, you know, be an entrepreneur. And that word is only one that I'm recently allowing myself to use. It's just like a willingness to be wrong and to fail and to change. That was not so embedded in me because, you know, being, you know, you're taught so much in school about getting straight A's and you have to be good at everything. And gymnastics is like a sport where there's just no room for error. And so
I think
I think one of the things that I'm really coming to enjoy about life now is just the ups and the downs and the roller coaster of it and the lack of linearity. Like that's been a new one for me. That was not part of my early understanding of what success could be, was that it wasn't always going to come. The work was always hard, but I think I never really understood what it meant to be like, oh, well, I got to totally change what I'm doing. And that's one that as I've gotten older, and I think I'm just getting more and more comfortable with it too.
Well, let's go back to your getting comfortable, because I thought that was really interesting, with the word entrepreneur. Tell me why you're comfortable now and what made you uncomfortable prior to use it.
I think that there is this image out in the world that I think is very well grounded of, you know, you're born as an entrepreneur and you have lemonade stands and yes. six businesses before you. And Holly, our founder, has that story, right? And she's got the classic founder story that, you know, is just such a, it never gets old for me to hear it. And it's just, it fills this image that we have as a culture of like what it means to be entrepreneurial. I didn't grow up that way. I was like always sort of working in bigger places and learning so much from them. But I think I always had this sort of feeling of desire to create something that wasn't there before. So even in these bigger companies, I had roles that had never existed before. And I was always sort of trying to figure out how to change the paradigm of even how these big companies were doing things. And I think I just didn't understand what that meant. And there wasn't really a label for it. And I will give EY credit for this. So I won their Entrepreneur of the Year award. And it was only when that sort of was, you know, and again, like I still kind of look back at that. I'm like, I don't even really know how that happened. But I was like, oh, I can be that too. And I hope that I can sort of use this platform to help people understand that anyone can be an entrepreneur. It's not something that if you didn't have the, so I think that's why I really would give them credit for that. And that program for me has been really impactful. And I think just again, it probably has a little bit to do with just coming to a place where I have gotten to sort of stretch myself in a different kind of way than I did, you know, earlier in my career. So I think that's kind of what's happened for me.
What made you leave? I mean, you began your career in finance, and then obviously you had stints in marketing, et cetera. But what made you want to go in-house again to a brand?
I think life is a journey of discovering what was maybe even there in the beginning. So I've always had a love of brand, a love of product, a love of storytelling, a love of art, a love of design. My earliest memories of what my first career was that I ever wanted was to be a store window designer. I grew up in New York City and I'd walk around and be like, well, so I think it was merchant maybe is what was in my head or product person or something. And I was very curious about why the Gap was popular. I wrote my college thesis on the Gap, like all these things. And it took me a little while to figure out that that could be a career that made sense. And the journey on Wall Street was really because I wanted some foundational business skills. It was a great opportunity at a very young age to be given a lot of responsibility. And I now look back on that and I'm like, I can't imagine doing what I do now without that fundamental training. So I think everything, you know, again, it all looks kind of obvious in hindsight, but my journey has been a series of test, learn, iterate, and kind of being very clear about who I am and what I love to do, but very open to how that can unfold. I think it's really hard until you get started to really know what's going to kind of make you sing. And the thing that I do now didn't even exist as a thing to do when I started in the beauty industry, right? There were no indie brands. There was no Shopify. There was no Instagram. There were like, you just couldn't even create what we've created at Supergoop. And so I always give that advice to young people of, you know, you just kind of can't dictate exactly what it's going to be. You have to have a sense of where you're going, but really open-minded about how you're going to get there, which I think a business is the same thing, right? We have big ideas at Supergoop about what we want to be, but you have to be kind of on high alert for optimizing for how you're going to get there based on the world and what changes around you.
For sure. So the idea of testing, learning, and iterating, I think is a wonderful concept, right? But you have to have management trust for them to sort of give the cosign of like, yeah, test, learn quickly, fail fast, move on. How do you think you positioned yourself to earn management trust throughout your career to be in a place where you could take risk and maybe not succeed and then learn from it and move on and apply those learnings?
When I look back on my, like, and again, this was like in the very beginning, first job, Goldman, even my internships, I was always willing to say, okay, I will do the job that is the thing that you're asking me to do. And I'm going to do that at 110%. But then I'm going to take another 10 to 20%. And will you give me the chance to do something extra that I felt like was the thing that I was curious about or thought could be done differently or better? And I'm going to go do that in addition. So I always sort of believed, and again, I give like, you know, young people this advice, that first you earn the trust because you make yourself so valuable to the people who you are working for that of course they want to see what you're going to do beyond that. And so I never asked for it within the bound. I was always like, well, I'm going to go do this separately in addition because I believe in it. And I'm going to take the time to do it. It has to be almost like an extracurricular activity, but you got to get the baseline done first.
That is such great advice. And also, I've never heard anyone else say that they do that on this show in particular. But, you know, that mentality is, I guess it goes back to your entire sort of work ethic and how you carried yourself throughout, you know, education and career. That mentality is hard to come by in employees these days. How do you inspire your team?
Look, I think that everybody is unique and everybody is motivated by different things, right? Just because this has been the right path for me doesn't mean it's the right path for everyone. And I've always sort of recognized that being a CEO is a unique experience and it's not for everybody. I believe that there's a right and wrong for you as a person and there's a right fit for certain jobs. So I would sort of start by saying that, like, I don't think that I haven't figured out for me. And I think in terms of inspiring people, first is about the matchmaking process of putting the right person in the right job. Like our whole brand is about imagining something that didn't exist before, right? So to love Supergoop means to sort of push your own self. I'm a first-time CEO. I've got a lot of people here who are first-time in what they're doing. They're learning, they're building, they're pushing their own selves to something that they never even like sort of done. And for the right person, that is just the opportunity to do that is inspiring. It wouldn't be the right thing for everybody, right? So I think as one thinks about careers and cultures and companies and jobs, sometimes there's this sort of false narrative of like, this is the way that it should be done. Or this is, I just always believe that it's my job to find the right people who find that idea of, you know, one of our values is we create our own box, but we never stay boxed in, right? We are boundary breakers. We've invented a category. We build, we change all the time. Like if that doesn't sound fun to you, there's no way I can, you know, so that I think it's first about finding the right match and the right career and the right environment where someone's really going to soar. And I think that's what I try and do when I interview people, because by the time I'm interviewing somebody, like they already can do the job, but I want people to love to do the job.
That bears repeating. And I think a lot of people don't realize when you get to those final rounds, everyone can do the job. So it's like, what's the differentiating factor? So switching gears for a second, you and I met a very, very, very long time ago. I think when you were just starting at Supergoop.
Literally just starting.
Mm-hmm. So when you were contemplating joining a startup, basically, what did you expect in this role and how different or the same was it as you've now navigated?
I think I was blissfully ignorant, and I mean that in a good way, because I didn't know. And I think that was the beauty of it. I think what I did know was that sunscreen is the most important thing you can do for your skin. And that is scientific fact. There's no debating that. It is a universal truth for everyone every single day. And that this brand was a brand with a capital B, that it was born that way, that Holly created it that way, and that she had a unique ability to create product and to see this white space and to create a brand and a product around something that I had always believed in as a beauty person. And somehow the match of those two things was just, it was too big to say no to. And somehow it didn't seem risky. It didn't seem like this big, you know, people ask me all the time, like, weren't you nervous? And I'm like, oh, no, not at all. And I think it came at a just a lucky moment in my career where I really was, you know, I had always wanted to get a shot at running the whole thing. Like I'm a marketer and brand person by passion and a sort of Excel spreadsheet lover by training. But I always wanted to see how all those things would come together. And you don't always control when you're going to get that shot. And I think I knew how big of a deal that was to have the opportunity to show the world maybe what I could do. And I wanted to see if I could do it. So when I take on a role, it's because I really believe that back to what we were saying before, that I'm the right person for that job. And I would not have been the right person for every founder, for every, you know, for every startup, for every brand. Like, you know, this is where brands are, you know, your brand person too, right? They connect with you. And if they connect with you as a marketer, your wheels just start churning and they never stop.
It's true.
And that's the magic of it, right?
Well, it is the magic of it. And I think making SPF sexy, fun, and cool, like, and clever is almost like an oxymoron in a way of just what you've been able to do with this brand. I mean, you've grown this company, what, 20x at this point or more?
I think more than that at this point. But yeah, it's a different animal than what it was when I started. Yeah.
When you think about brand and you think about growth,
yeah,
how do you think about like expanding but remaining true to the core DNA of the brand and the purpose?
I think it starts with having a really clear core DNA and purpose. And that's what I mean by like brand with a capital B. Mm-hmm. And this is LVMH training at work. And that comes at birth. That Holly created something with such a clarity of mission, such extraordinary brand, you know, sort of aesthetics, such a personality, such a voice. I mean, the name, the logo, the exclamation point, like all these things. That comes from a founder. It's not created in a PowerPoint slide. That comes from a soul. And I think once you have that, the answers become very obvious. Like I think where brands kind of get lost is when they either forget that because they try to be something that they're not, or they never had clarity about who they were in the first place. I think that the first bucket, I think, is always solvable. You can get off track, you pull yourself on. I think you can make a good business for a little while with something that's not a real brand, but it never stands the test of time. You can have a moment, you can have a product that's a hit, but like those are the things that come and go in our world. But when you look at the great brands and the icons and the things that I hope that Supergoop will be, it's the ones that, you know, it's, well, what is this going to be in 100 years from now? That's always how I've thought. And I think that you're born with the potential for that. Someone like me cannot go back and make that happen.
A great answer. When we think about collaborations and partnerships and sort of like-minded, you know, other brands that we can play in the sandbox with, what do you look for in a partner? Because you guys have done such fun, creative, cool activations, many more experiential in the past couple of years, right? Obviously, COVID aside. Like, what makes something right for Supergoop? Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, again, I sort of believe that brands are a little bit like people, right?
It's true. And, yes.
You know, there are common personality traits or common sets of values. There's sort of these places where, and that doesn't mean it's always the same. It can be wildly unexpected, but you're like, oh, that kind of makes sense. And it comes from the spirit. Again, these are things that this is this part of me that does not fit in a spreadsheet. You kind of know it or you don't. I think that it's really about an attitude, a philosophy that a brand might have that is in its personality, that's in its purpose, right? We sell sunshine for a living. So like, it would not make sense for us to partner with a brand that has got a different sort of attitude or aura to it. We are doing something that is improving the health of people around the world. So obviously, like, it has to be something that is going to make the world a better place. But again, that's not meant that everything has to be a very rigid definition of that. It can be, you know, it can be much broader than it. And I think like what we have the luxury of doing is that there's a breadth of our potential consumer base, which is the thing that I love about this, right? Everyone, every single day. This is a brand that was built to appeal to, you know, 6-month-old baby at their first sunscreen up to, you know, grandpa on the golf cart and everything in between. That gives you a huge reach. Now, one of the biggest challenges as a marketer, and we have more ideas than we know what to do with, is to say like, okay, but what is the purpose of my marketing? What are the tasks that I need to get done? Then I need to line my partnerships up with things that, you know, again, are the right for us at this stage. So yes, we've grown a lot, but we're still very early in our journey of what I believe this can be. And so we have to choose things that make sense at the right time. But we've done everything from show up on the top of a ski mountain to lemonade trucks and, you know, and everything in between. And we've done Love Shack Fancy and Minions. Like, how many brands can actually say that they can coexist in those two worlds? And when it goes back to what I loved about this brand was I just don't think there's many brands that can say that. And that makes it really fun. So I definitely think that that part of my team has, you know, I think everybody has a great, again, back to the matchmaking of like, if it doesn't matter who you are here, it's like, you're here because you're great at what you do. But certainly that IRL and partnerships team, they never cease to amaze me with what they're up to.
It's so fun. But, you know, it's also a little bit of a marketing nightmare because it is for everyone. And it's hard to market to everyone, right?
Yeah.
And actually, Marcus Collins, who is a professor at Ross, at Michigan Ross in Marketing, who came on Lead Your Mark a couple of weeks ago, he has a new book out called For the Culture. And we were talking about sort of audience segmentation, where, you know, brands, it's almost like the lazy way out when a brand is like, okay, we're just going to speak to this like one demographic. And we're going to put all these people who, if you have a minivan, you probably live in the suburbs and you probably take your kids to soccer. So really kind of just like presuming you understand a certain group and you paintbrush a strategy across. And we were just joking at how it's just not how the world works. And you can't just lump people into these segments in the way that maybe like back in the day you might learn in like, you know, an MBA class in marketing. So when you have a brand, like you literally are saying, wear this every day. We are for everyone from, you know, newborn to grandpa. How do you think about your marketing matrix?
I think there's two aspects to that. One is just because you can be a brand that will eventually have marketing to everybody doesn't mean you have to do it now. So to me, there's a big difference between no and not now. That is like one of the biggest challenges of entrepreneurship is you can see the big picture, but that doesn't mean you can go do all of it right away. And that's really hard, right? Because you just like get so excited about what your potential is. So some of it is not just about no, but it's about when, right? And it's like, okay, I might, you know, really believe that there's a huge opportunity in this segment, but that doesn't mean I have the money or the wherewithal to go and do that. I think the other thing to really think about is that, you know, we really believe that our role is to create the category and to lead the category, right? And I think if you look at, you know, some analogies out there or something, you know, I look at Starbucks, right? Like how many $6 lattes or whatever they are now, how much money they cost, did anybody buy before that brand showed up? Like, not really, right? So they created this entire way of being and daily habit around coffee consumption. Do they sell every single coffee out there? Are there brands that have kind of come around that are more what I'm going to call niche and sort of very specific in how they're targeting, and they will sort of have part of that pie of what Starbucks created? Absolutely, yes. But Starbucks is going to kind of live above that. They're living in this kind of other space that is an ability to connect with everybody in a really unique way that I think is the gift that you're given when you create a category, that it is sort of, it's part of leading the way is that you get to have this more universal appeal. You do the hard work of creating the business for kind of everybody. And what you get in exchange is being known as the one that kind of is the gold standard that is sort of sitting above it all. So that's really where I think of Supergoop and how we're approaching these things. But I think that I would draw the distinction between a breadth of appeal, but clarity about mission and how we do it, right? So all these nuances of our personality. So that is really clear. And we're like, we make sunscreen. We're not here to do other things. And that's where I think we are very narrow and very focused.
For people who are listening who've never heard of Supergoop, I imagine there will be some, right?
I hope so. My best is when I get somebody who's never heard of it. So
right. So here's an opportunity, I'll leave your mark, to explain. Yeah. Like, obviously, Supergoop didn't invent sunblock, right? So when you say create a category, can you explain a little bit about the innovative nature of what you all have been able to do with Supergoop?
I think our mission and our philosophy is to change the way the world thinks about sunscreen. You're right. We are not the first ones to have invented SPF, but when this brand was created, and even 7 years ago when I joined it, sunscreen was an icky, sticky, tacky mess that you put up with at the beach. it was not something that sparked joy. It was not something that people love to have in their daily routine, but it is literally the most important thing that you can do for your skin. 90% of the signs of aging come from the sun, and 1 in 5 people will be diagnosed with skin cancer in their lifetimes. Those are pretty profound numbers. And so what we have done differently is say, if I believe that everyone should wear it every single day, how do you change behavior? And you do it through product innovation. And innovation in product can come in texture, feel, you know, unseen sunscreen. No one ever seen a clear sunscreen before. Really pushing the boundaries of what the product could even be, of how it feels on the skin, of the ingredient choices that you make and putting it into the product. And we now have almost 50 different formulas that there's no one size fits all. So that's how you can kind of actually create a business and a brand that has so much potential in the breadth of its audience, because we're not saying, oh, this is the only one. We're saying you need options, you need choices for who you are, your lifestyle, what day of the week it is, all these things. And that is really unique. There's just nobody else out there that thinks about that. And that's what's really fun about doing this, is that we don't do anything that's been done before. That just seems like no fun at all. So
no fun at all. But I also want to say, well, one, you'll be very proud because I wear it every day, even in the winter. Yes, I know. I feel like really good saying that. But you'll even love this more. So Sabrina, my 15-year-old, came home one day, and I'm not even just saying this because you're on the show right now. And she was like, can you get me, what is it called? The glow sticks? Super glue?
Glow stick, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She goes, can you get me the super goop glow stick? And I'm like, this is a person who fights with me for her whole life on sunscreen. And I was like, I'm sorry. Did you just ask me for sunscreen? And she was like, yeah, it's really cool. So like, you have reached beyond, you've got the baby, the grandpa, and then the 15-year-old. And honestly, the 15-year-old is probably the hardest market of them all.
I hear this, you know, it's one of my, it brings joy to me because I feel like I have had this happen with many of my friends who have daughters around that age. And I am like, we're doing something right when mom and daughter both genuinely love and want the product, because A, that shows you again, like what this brand can be. And again, I just don't think it's a very atypical thing actually in the beauty industry, right? To have that brand sort of sit much more clearly and very specific. I think outside of beauty, you can start to see, and I think in fashion, there's some and food, like the brands that sort of have a much broader appeal. It's very rare in beauty. I think I'd have a hard time really. Brands get much more pigeonholed, I think, quickly into like, this is who they're going after. So I take a lot of pride in that. And then, you know, my husband wears it and I have a 9-year-old son and he is like really into it. So that's something, you know, again, I didn't create a brand that could do that. I certainly have hopefully helped influence the decisions that we've made to sort of capture that. But that's something really cool about it.
It is really cool. And it's usually like game over. Like if the parent likes something, usually the kid
doesn't like it. It's automatically, oh, that's my mom's thing. I don't want that. And we never set out to, again, it was built into the purpose of this brand to begin with, but I think it comes from such a pure place. I think to your point, I think in marketing, I don't think you get to just decide, oh, this is my target market and the consumer tells you what they are going to respond to and they're in the driver's seat. And so I think like when stuff like that happens, I just feel very lucky. So fun story.
What do you think moves the needle today in marketing? Like, what is the sort of magic mix?
I don't think there's ever an answer of marketing. I think there's certainly levers that come and go. I don't think there's a perfect mix. I think one of the greatest challenges of marketing is that the age-old saying of, you know, there's 50% of my marketing work, since 50% doesn't, I just don't know which one. I think hopefully we get more than 50%, but I think it's an art, not a science, despite the fact that it's become more trackable, more measurable than it ever has before. I still don't think that that means it's 100%. I don't think there's ever one thing that lasts over time. I think you can have a viral hit and that can last you a year, but I don't think we have some secret of, we know some tool that nobody else has heard of. I think it's just how we do it and the talent of the people who create the content that then gets the marketing dollars put behind, if that makes sense.
For sure. Listen, it's been an exhausting month in social media land. I mean, every team
month feels like an exhausting month, but
every every team, I swear, when Threads just came out of like the blue sky, everyone that I spoke to was like, no, thank you. We're good here. We're good. We don't need any more platforms. And it is hard for a brand because it's like all of a sudden you've got to like add another mix into the matrix, which is already a full plate. So when you think about, you know, you said you have 50 different formulas, like when you are thinking about a new formula, a new whatever, a new partnership, do you have a certain, I mean, your background would tell me that you do, like a certain decision matrix that you do the mental gymnastics in? Like your team brings you all these ideas, I'm sure, all the time, and they're all fun and amazing. But like, how do you say, like, that's what we're going to do?
I think it depends on the thing. Product answer is different than marketing answer is different than content answer. So whereas in product, I really believe we should be the first. In marketing tools, I don't always think that that's our job, right? That we were not the first people on TikTok. We were on Threads. My team did an amazing job. But I think, look, my job is to make sure that we're using our resources appropriately, right? Like it's like resource allocation is sort of one of the most important parts of my job description, which is sort of a less sexy way of describing, like, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about we have finite resources, we have finite dollars, and more importantly than dollars, we have finite hours in the day and people who can, I don't want them working 24/7. So it has to move the needle. But moving the needle doesn't always mean dollars and cents, right? You can move the needle from a mission point of view. You can do something because we do a lot of things because it's our job as people that created a company to stop skin cancer that have nothing to do with whether or not it's going to improve our bottom line. Now, we need a really strong bottom line to enable those things. But so I think I always think about, is it worth it? And can we create a great win? That doesn't mean you can guarantee a great win every time, but you're kind of calculating for, if I get this right, do I have the chance of an outsized return? I think that's kind of what's going through my head. But again, outsized return can mean different things depending upon the situation. So with like new social platforms, you have to say, is this going to be around? And also, how much effort is it going to take me to be good at this? Because a lot of things will come and go, right? Oh, yeah. So we'll see what happens with all of them.
Is there anyone you can point to in your life that has been an instrumental mentor to you throughout your career?
There are many people. And I think that one of the things that I've sort of really thought about as I've built my career is that I've learned and I'm kind of like a sponge and I will sit in rooms, and I did this, you know, my first job that I ever had, and just soak up, what is this person really great at? And what am I going to file away as my thing that I'm taking from them? And if I think about every single person that I've worked with or for, or who's worked even for me, I've learned something different from all of them, because I think we all have unique strengths. And so when I come to a problem, I often, there are sometimes like the people that I'm like, oh, I know they would know how to solve this. Some of them I will ask explicitly, or some of them I'll just sort of channel the energy. So my greatest wish in my own career is that maybe someday someone would say that I could be that person for someone else. And so there's many, many, many men and women who have just had a huge impact on me. And I try and make an effort, and I think they would know that I try and say that, because I think now that I'm in the other side of things, and gosh, there's still people like, let's be very real. I am still learning every single day, and I'm still out there trying to find people who are in my life. And now it's often other CEOs that I, you know, really start to learn and respect. And it's this sort of really interesting dynamic that starts to emerge that I've learned about as you kind of reach a different point in one's career, where it's other peers that kind of, you know, we'll talk about what's going on in their businesses. And it's just those relationships are really precious to me too.
Oh, they really are precious, because they're the only people who actually understand what you're going through every single day. They all understand.
It's a common experience. That's really, it's really humbling to sort of be like, oh, okay, you totally get this.
And, very effective also. Last question, always the same. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark?
I hope that somehow through what I do, other people can be the best at what they do. I think that that, and like I said, I sort of think of these people that were so meaningful to me and that I know that I'm here because of a combination of all of them, that if I can just be one moment in other people's lives, that they look back at their time at Supergoop or with that, they are somehow that's being a part of their journey. That's what I hope. So
I love that. I love that. Amanda, it's so good to see you. Thank you so much for coming on Leave Your Mark. This was so fun.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the summer.
Oh my God, you too.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Leave Your Mark. If you want more career advice or tips on personal branding, make sure to pick up a copy of my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception. Want to land your dream job or kill it in your career? Don't forget about my first book, Leave Your Mark. If you want me to speak at your company or at an offsite, or if you need consulting services, please go to alizalick.com. I would love to connect with you there and on social media. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.